Listen up, if you're a Stanley Kubrick fan and you're into the symbolism hidden in his works, you've seen The Shining, you've seen A Clockwork Orange, you've got to listen to today's episode. I've got two very special guests, and they're going to break down an amazing theory connecting a lot of elements about Stanley Kubrick that you've got to hear. We're talking about A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3, a new documentary by Ryder Lee and none other than Jay Widener, who I've talked about many times on this show. We're going to talk today about the symbolism of MKUltra mind control, some of Kubrick's secrets, the Beatles, alchemy, NASA, Operation Paperclip. I'm going to hit him with the big question. Is Kubrick a good guy or is he a bad guy? And we're going to talk about A Catcher in the Rye, which you got to stay subscribed to my show because I'm going to do a book review of this and it's going to be crazy. So make sure you catch the A Catcher in the Rye book review when I drop that here in the next few weeks. But today's episode, you got to stick around to the end because Jay Widener, he gives us some clues on a secret society in Denver that he doesn't even want to mention their name because they're so dangerous. And maybe my man's found the Illuminati for real. So this is a very special episode. I'm very excited because, you know, I'm very much into Kubrick and you should be too. So take a listen today as we discuss A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3, and go stream it. Support these guys at Amazon or Apple TV+. I'll have links in the show notes where you can find all their works. All right, today I'm joined by two very special guests who need no introduction, but I'm going to give you one anyway. Our first guest is Ryder Lee. He's the director of A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3. He's also the host and producer of the Raised by Giants podcast. Tons of great guests. Clyde Lewis, Ryan Burns, Whitley Strieber, Darcy Weir, and of course our other guest, Jay Widener. He's also the director of JFKX, Solving the Crime of the Century with Jay Widener, which leads us to our second guest today, the legend, the man himself, Jay Widener, producer of A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3. He's director of Kubrick's Odyssey 1 and 2, Beyond Belief with George Norrie, mastermind of the rise of the Gaia Network, as seen in the Darcy Weir documentary that I just wrapped up called Dark Alliance. That's also a must-see. Jay's also featured at the top of my special thanks in my 2014 Kubrick's Code book, where I dived into the symbolism of Stanley Kubrick. And anyone who's followed me since 2011 knows I've referenced Jay Widener countless times as an inspiration for how I got into this strange world of conspiracy, synchromysticism, and crypto-kubrology. So Ryder and Jay are here to discuss their latest project, A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3, now available on Amazon Prime, which is where I bought and streamed my copy. So while we're having our discussion today, I want my dear listeners to get the full story. Go get the movie. Required viewing if you're into the Kubrick symbolism theories. So I followed Jay Widener since before I started my blog in 2011. And Jay, you were very influential in my early research and interest into the esoteric side of Kubrick. And I'm very excited for this conversation. I'm pretty new to Ryder's work. And I'd love to start out there by asking Ryder, your inspirations. How did you get into Kubrick? How did you get into symbolism? What is your primary interest in this sort of field of conspiracy, synchromysticism, entertainment, that kind of thing?
Well, first off, thanks for having us on. Really appreciate it, brother. And what had happened was, is I was bringing Jay on my show, and I was familiar with his work before, and I'd watched his two prior movies to this, Kubrick's Odyssey 1 and Kubrick's Odyssey 2. And I like to, you know, watch people's work before I bring them on, so you know I have good things to ask them questions about and I can keep the conversation going. And I was watching The Shining over and over and over again, and I was like, I gotta bring something new to the table here when I'm talking to Jay Widener. You know, I gotta be bringing something new that I have seen. And I was watching The Shining over and over and over again, and I was like, well, am I gonna find anything here that people haven't seen before? And I was kind of skeptical of that. I was like, I guess there's so many theories about Stanley Kubrick and The Shining. It's the most theorized movie ever in the history of movies. And I'm rewatching it. And I am starting to see things that no one had ever seen. And then I bring it up to Jay Widener on my show, which was around 2 years ago. And I was like, Jay, this is what I think is going on. And Jay was like, yeah, I think you're right. And a few months later, I hit him up. I was like, Jay, we need to do a documentary on this. And he was like, yeah, I think we should. And we ended up doing JFKX first, which I'm really glad that we did JFKX first because it gave me the ability to cut my teeth on a different type of movie. And this one was before this one. And this one was a really big project. It took me a really long time to put all this stuff together. We have so many things in it. a lot of people in it. We got Mark Devlin in it. We got Walter Bosley, AFL-SI agent Walter Bosley. We got author and researcher Joe Atwell and MK Ultra Monarch survivor Kathy O'Brien. So that's a little bit about the inception and how it came to be. It was just me watching The Shining over and over and over and over again. Like a lot of people in this community that have found, you know, Kubrick symbolism over, that's what I did as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's been so influential for me. The Kubrick stuff as a teenager, I was watching Kubrick movies and I didn't really understand what was going on with them, and it just made me keep watching and watching and watching. And it wasn't until it was around in the 2000s, I was listening to podcasts early on, and that's where I had found Jay's work. I believe I was listening to Freeman Fly. I don't even remember at this point. It might have been Red Ice Radio, Veritas. I don't even remember. There wasn't anyone else that was really covering the Kubrick symbolism and stuff. And Jay, I've heard your interviews over the years many times, and it's interesting that I finally caught up with you, because it's always been in the back of my mind of like, man, I got to get a hold of Jay Widener. I got to interview this guy, right? And because I consider you one of the godfathers of this corner of pop culture meeting conspiratorial symbolism and synchro mysticism. And for my guests who maybe aren't familiar with your background, would you mind sharing, and obviously, you know, you can go as far back as you want, but I'm interested in how far back these interests for you go into this realm, because I've had this, and let me frame this up better. I've been researching a lot of James Shelby Downard recently. He's one of these sort of legendary figures in this realm. And, there's guys that have been talking about this stuff for a long time, and I had no idea who they were. So would you mind sharing with us what got you into all of this sort of field of research?
Well, actually, I started out studying alchemy. I was an atheist and believed in science and everything. I was a screenwriter in Hollywood. And I discovered the book Mystery of the Cathedrals by the anonymous alchemist named Fulcanelli. And I set out to disprove the book, essentially. I was going to completely debunk it. And so I read it like Ryder watched The Shining. I read this book like 40 times. And every time I read it, I got more and more converted into believing that maybe I didn't know everything about this reality. Maybe I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. And that kind of cracked open my psychic, I don't know, whatever. And at the same time, I was really interested in movies. And my first religious experience was going to see 2001: A Space Odyssey when I was 15. And literally, I couldn't get out of my chair when the movie ended. My girlfriend's like trying to pull me, and I'm like, what was that? Right? And then I immediately went out and bought a movie camera, editing thing. My family thought I had gone crazy. My dad was questioning me because I was going to be an engineer, and all of a sudden I wasn't going to be an engineer anymore. And so the two kind of went together, and finally the whole thing, my filmmaking skills and my mystical bent, you know, finally married together when I became the head of production and the head of content at Gaia in 2012, and, you know, produced around, I think 2000 hours worth of programming. I was the only producer from 2012 to 2016 when they finally hired somebody else to produce. And so I retired in 2018, and then Ryder got me out of retirement in last year a year and a half ago when we decided to do JFKX. And I got back into the swing of it. Now I'm really enjoying myself and got a lot of future projects up, we're going to approach and do. And I think actually, Clockwork Shining is the best of the Kubrick trilogy. Just because I was did those all by myself. I mean, I did the voiceover, I did the editing, the shooting, the everything myself. And it was just really nice to have a collaboration where I could reflect off of the ideas off of somebody else. And then that person could also execute, which I agree with you, Ryder. Doing JFKX was just probably one of the more brilliant moves that we made in this whole process, because you cut your teeth on it. We got to make a film, it made money, and we got to use that money to make A Clockwork Shining. And so we got to make a much bigger production this time. But basically, I've studied alchemy and filmmaking, and I came to the conclusion about 25 years ago that 2001 A Space Odyssey is really a work of alchemy. It's the only film that's actually a work of alchemy, and it has all the four stages of alchemy. It has the process of alchemy. It has the ultimate redemption, where you're reborn as a star child at the end. And and then, you know, probably one of the highest points of my life was when I got an email from Christiane Kubrick's secretary telling me that if I'm ever in London, to come visit her. She wants to talk to me. And I never did it because I was afraid I'd get followed and maybe cause some problems for her, because she, you know, probably was going to tell me things that, probably more about alchemy, by the way. I think that's what she was interested in talking to me about. So Kubrick had a high interest in alchemy, apparently.
Oh, interesting.
He was saying, yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, because I got in, like I alluded to earlier, a lot of my formative research of getting into this, because when I started out, you know, I was a very similar paths. I went to school for engineering, and I kind of did systems engineering for a while. And, you know, now I kind of still have a day job, but this sort of podcasting book writing thing is my obsessive hobby that works out for me. But a lot of the ideas of alchemy and film being a sort of initiatory experience, that resonates with me as well. And it's interesting that some people like us can watch, you know, cause I'm super into, Kubrick films and Twin Peaks, and there's something about it that it just speaks on this much deeper level. And some people get it, and some people just don't get it. Right. Yeah. And the 2001 A Space Odyssey alchemical process, that was, something that led me to read all the books that Arthur C. Clarke wrote, all the sequels. Yeah. And when you read the sequels, it lays it out very clearly that very clearly. They have a plan for mankind, and it's to get us into this digital consciousness / digital matrix. You know, and it gets into a lot of spirituality of Kabbalah, and sort of taking man from spirit to material realm, and then back into the spiritual realm is kind of what seems like they're doing. But yeah, fascinating stuff.
It is. And the more I look into it and the more I think about it, the more it seems obvious to me that, of course, Kubrick would have been taken in to the, I don't know what you want to call it, the complex, you know, of the leadership of the world, because of his incredible filmmaking skills. And, you know, he wanted to tell us, you know, there's all sorts of movies. Ryder and I were talking about this the other day, all sorts of movies in Hollywood, which clearly point to the fact that Kubrick had something to do with the moon landings. There's Toy Story 1, where Buzz Lightyear finds out he's not a real astronaut, and the carpets from The Shining are in the background when he discovers that he's not an astronaut. And then there's also that movie Being There with Peter Sellers, where they're playing the music from 2001 A Space Odyssey, and they're showing Apollo 11 toys in a window at the same moment. And over you can see in Wag the Dog, the film director's name is Stanley, played by Dustin Hoffman, and he's doing secret work for the CIA, and he wants to get credit for it, and then he dies at the end. Over we see that, you know, this is not a big secret. Now, what is a secret and what is going to come across as a shock to everybody is what we show in A Clockwork Shining, because that, to me, is the mother load of all of his films. I actually don't like The Shining as much as a lot of other films, but he put so much in it. He put so many layers in it that it becomes undeniable. And you know, and I'd always had this weird suspicion about it. I remember talking to Dave McGowan, who wrote Weird Scenes in Laurel Canyon. We talked about how the Lookout Mountain Hotel looks so much like the Overlook in Stanley Kubrick's movie. And he also brought up, you know, the Monarch poster when we were having this conversation. It always struck me as weird that that Monarch poster was in that room when Operation Monarch was such a pivotal part of the MK Ultra programs. And then you realize, of course, after Barry Lyndon, Shining, Full Metal Jacket, and Eyes Wide Shut are actually more than movies. They're experiments. They're experiments. And each one has a purpose for the experiment has a purpose. And the purpose of the experiment of The Shining was to reveal not only that the MK Ultra operations, but actually how they do it, how they use actors and the drugs and all of that stuff to massage the brain. And then we brilliantly bring it around to show you that everything now is MK Ultra. Everything.
It's definitely fascinating to me. And it's as a sort of side note, because I do want to come back to Dave McGowan in 1 second. I remember I watched Kubrick's Odyssey 1 and 2 because I started blogging in 2011, podcasting in 2014, and I was writing books ever since 2012. And the Kubrick's Odyssey 1 and 2, I listened to a bunch of interviews with you, Jay, and I recall around 2012 or 13, you said you were working on Kubrick's Odyssey 3, and I've been waiting for years and years and years, and I kind of gave up. I was like, I guess he's not going to do it, you know. And I don't even know how it crossed my radar, but I saw somewhere that there was a Kubrick's Odyssey 3. I said, my jaw dropped because it was my birthday. My birthday is on JFK's assassination day, 11/22. And that's when I saw it. I was like, oh, this is the greatest birthday present ever. So I hurried over to Amazon and watched it. And yeah, I'm with you guys 100%. I think that this could be sort of the granddaddy of all the big secrets. And
it's a sine qua non of all the Kubrick research, I do believe. And it doesn't reject anybody else's research either. We're not screw you. We're the ones that found everything. But that's not what this is about. What this is about is how clever Kubrick snuck all this in to a pop culture icon like Stephen King's The Shining, right? And Stephen King's head's whirling. He's like, what's going on here? I can't figure out what this movie's about, right? And it's like, this is what it's about, man. And, you know, and it may be about the Holocaust and the slaughter of Native Indians and the moon landing and all that. That actually goes in with MK Ultra if you think about it, right? There's right, the Holocaust and the paperclip guys coming over with the MK Ultra research that they then gave to, you know, the psychiatrists and the CIA, right? The spycatrists, I like to call them. Yeah. So yeah, I think if you really want to understand Kubrick, you got to watch the entire Kubrick's Odyssey, but you won't get it until number 3.
Yes, I agree.
The moon landing. The second one is all the mystical aspects of 2001. And the third one, really, it's a marriage between A Clockwork Orange and The Shining, two of the more interesting films that he made.
There's a lot of, it's like, sorry, Ryder, it's just like an onion, right? I'm trying to describe for the audience. It's like an onion because, like you were saying, it doesn't disqualify other theories or topics. It's just, you kind of got to understand each layer that he baked into these films. Go ahead, Ryder.
Yeah, it's just people, like, you can not like the movie or not like us or something or like that, because there's been a few people that has just been like, oh, well, you know, it's whatever about it, because they don't like either one of us or Jay Widener. But it's very difficult to argue with. Like, there hasn't been anybody that has come out and been like, no, this isn't what's going on in this movie. Like, it's laid out in such a way that it's once you see all of the clues that we present in our movie, it's undeniable at that point. Like Jay was just talking about the Monarch poster in the background. There's you know, Wendy and Dan, Wendy, when we first meet Wendy, she's reading a book by an intelligence officer, J.D. Salinger, called Catcher in the Rye, which Catcher in the Rye has been, you know, associated with two major assassinations that happened within a year of The Shining, which was John Lennon and Ronald Reagan. And which is another thing that is really interesting, because there's so much Beatles symbolism within The Shining as well. And then John Lennon was assassinated less than a year after The Shining was released, and he had Catcher in the Rye in there, which was before the assassination took place. And then you look at...
I want to interrupt you, but you just reminded me of something. Very little known fact. Stanley Kubrick and the Beatles were in discussion to make Lord of the Rings in like 1969. They were in discussion. He was actually in discussion. They were going to play the Four Hobbits, and Kubrick was going to make it, and there was no way he said I could do the effects.
Well, did you guys
gave up on the product? But you reminded me then. Now I know why he has the Abbey Road stuff in The Shining.
All right.
And then Stephen King got the name of the book from a John Lennon song, which says "We all shine on."
Oh, I didn't know that. It's funny you guys brought that up. In fact, you know, another weird synchronicity. When I first started out, I was working with Mark Devlin. We did a bunch of interviews together and such. And it was funny. The day before I saw that Kubrick's Odyssey 3 was released, I had emailed Mark, because about a year prior he had emailed me and I was just too busy. And I didn't get around to replying to him. And I was like, oh, I'm such a jerk. And it hit me one day. I was like, oh, I got to write him back. I write him back. And then the next day I see Kubrick's Odyssey 3. I'm like, oh crap, I got to watch this. So I stream it, and lo and behold, there's Mark Devlin in the documentary. And what's interesting is that I believe when I read his first book, I can't think of the title of it. Terrible host. Musical.
Truth, anyway. Volume 1.
Yes, there you go. I believe he talked about the MK Ultra connection to the Beatles with the dentist John Reilly. And I just saw on the tabloid news last week that they reference an older book that was from 15 years ago about a book about the Beatles. And it just started resurfacing this idea that they were actually not just dosed with LSD, but maybe they were actually MK Ultra'd by this dentist who has these connections with the intelligence.
The greatest MK Ultra operation of all time. There's just no doubt about it. And they didn't write their own music. They didn't write the lyrics. They did sing, but they didn't play the music. We're pretty dang sure of that by now. So we were going to, actually, believe it or not, the next movie was going to be on the Beatles. But all the people started pulling out because they got worried that we'd get sued by Apple, which we probably could. So it was going to be the third one. Ryder was going to direct it and edit it just like these last two. But, well, we didn't get to it. So we have to go out to something else.
Ryder, I didn't mean to cut you off. Where were you going with that? You were talking about a Catcher in the Rye and J.D. Salinger. Yeah,
we had Catcher in the Rye. Then you also look at, you know, what Jack is typing out. He's supposed to be writing a novel this entire time, which within the first 10 minutes of the movie is the most interesting part of the movie to me, that really gets overlooked by a lot of people that are studying the movie, because Stuart Allman basically lays out the entire plot of the movie in that first 10 minutes to Jack. You know, he's like, this isn't a physically demanding job. This is more of a psychological job because of the time that you're going to be spending up here, the isolation that you're going to suffer. It's difficult to get off the mountain. It's snowed in, like the snow is really bad. And then he goes on to explain that, you know, what happened to Grady, that Grady got, you know, cabin fever or whatever, and then killed his family, which is exactly what ends up happening to Jack. And then you have, you know, Jack writing this novel, which he's not really writing a novel. He's just writing the same sentence over and over and over again. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And Wendy comes in, then he becomes triggered, which there's so many real life examples of Kubrick movies like influencing real life, which we bring up Sue Lyon in the movie as well with Lolita, and the same thing that Lolita is about, which is basically about pedophilia, is the exact same thing that's happening to Sue Lyon in real life from Kubrick's producer. Then you look at A Clockwork Orange and the things that were going on there when that movie got released, like crime rose heavily. There was you know, murders that was called Clockwork Murders. We show all of the newspaper articles in the movie. It flashes really fast, so it's difficult for people to really get a good look at it. But and then Kubrick pulled the movie from a lot of countries in the UK and a few other different countries as well. And then you have the real life scenario with The Shining and Shelley Duvall, basically the same thing that happened to Sue Lyon with Lolita sort of happened with Shelley Duvall, besides the, you know, the sexual abuse and the pedophilia. But it basically ruined Shelley Duvall's entire career from the abuse that she suffered by Stanley Kubrick, just as it ruined Sue Lyon's career decades earlier with Lolita.
What did that abuse entail? Do you know?
Go watch The Making of The Shining by Vivian Kubrick. He's screaming at her. He's yelling at her. It's actually embarrassing to watch. You feel nothing but sorrow for Shelley in the movie. But he was that way. I heard from somebody inside that the first day of shooting of Eyes Wide Shut, Stanley came up to him and said, "Oh, we're shooting something special." Comes to Tom Cruise and said, "We're shooting a special scene today. It's going to be a dream sequence. It's not in the script." Tom goes, "Okay, well, what are we doing?" He goes, "You're going to dress up like a woman and you're going to model in front of the crew." He said, "What?" He said, "Yeah." And he dressed him up with fishnet stockings and a mini skirt and a wig and everything, put makeup all over Tom Cruise. And then Tom Cruise pranced on a runway in front of the whole crew that was shooting the movie for like 8 hours. And Kubrick, "Do it again. Let's do that. Say it." What was he doing? He was taking this big, huge movie star and reducing him down, right? "And you're not going to be the big guy on this set. I'm the big guy on this set," right? And he embarrassed Tom Cruise in front of all the guys. And
the humiliation ritual, yeah.
Yeah, Kubrick would do anything to get the shot. I mean, every good director would do anything to get the shot.
I'd read about the making of Eyes Wide Shut, how he separated Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise for their sort of, like Nicole Kidman had that scene with the naval officer, you know, the sex scene. And he did that on purpose to sort of torment Tom Cruise so he didn't see what was going on. And there's a lot of stuff that Kubrick seemed to do that. And that's kind of, I was going to kind of save this for the end and we'll keep it for the end. But my question when we're done sort of going through all this is, I want to ask you guys later what your sort of verdict is on Kubrick, because that's the big question for me always is, was he black hat or white hat? Was he the good guy trying to sort of spill the beans and wake people up, or, you know, that kind of thing? But first, I want to go back. I don't want to go past this, because this is important, this Catcher in the Rye MK Ultra sort of idea. Because you mentioned Dave McGowan, and he wrote a book called Program to Kill about serial killers connected into a lot of these sort of conspiracies. And I read Tom O'Neill's Chaos, the book about the Charles Manson story. And it sort of, I don't want to say confirmed, but like, to me, it confirmed a lot of theories that went around about Manson being involved with some of the ABCs and these organizations that maybe they were teaching him how to do these kinds of things. And the whole idea of Catcher in the Rye, which after watching Kubrick's Odyssey 3, I read Catcher in the Rye for the first time ever. And I to be honest, I was kind of blown away. And I read it because you guys talk about Joseph Atwill and some of his theories about the book being a sort of coded Freemasonic ritual. And when I read the book, I had no idea what Catcher in the Rye was about. I've talked about it a million times because it comes up in all these conspiracies, but I had no idea what it was about. And I read it and my jaw dropped, because my reaction when I read it was that it seemed to me like it was a version of American Psycho, the movie. It seemed like that, where this guy's lines of the dream world and the real world are blurring, and like, is he murdering people? Is he not? And when I went online to read what people's interpretation of this book, they're like, "Oh, it's about the loss of innocence and a man getting older." And I was like, "What are you talking about? Like, this is like a dark ass book." See why people connect this in with a lot of this dark stuff. But Ryder, were you saying that the first shot we see of what's going on here, you know, it's when Stuart Allman is talking to Jack Nicholson. And meanwhile, you see Shelley Duvall's character reading Catcher in the Rye. because you're saying J.D. Salinger, you said he was an intelligence asset or an agent or something like that?
Yes, yes, he was. And the book was found on two of the major assassinations, one the attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan, which is so interesting because John Hinckley Jr. is out of prison.
Yeah, he just got out recently, right?
He has a YouTube channel.
Well, you know, and something else that's really weird, and this might be relevant to the sort of synchromysticism angle of everything, is I did a show in July focusing on the date of July 16th, because a lot of heavy ritualistic type events line up for that date. We've got the Trinity test of the first atomic bomb testing in 1945. You've got the launching of Apollo 11. And you've got the release of Eyes Wide Shut, which Kubrick had it contractually releasing July 16th, 1999.
And 30-year anniversary.
Exactly. And the other, when I was doing that show, I was sort of researching, trying to figure out, like, why is it important? What does it matter? And there were a couple ideas I floated out there. If you look at from a gematria perspective, you've got the date of 7/16, and if you sort of gematria that out, you've got 7 and 1 plus 6 is 7, so 7/7, and the number 77 represents like this sort of connection to the divine and spiritual awakening and stuff. And Catcher in the Rye also released on 7/16. And I didn't know what to make of all that, and then I watched the documentary you guys put together, and my mind is racing with all these sort of theories of MK Ultra, because we know that the intelligence agencies were dabbling in sort of pseudo scientific circles, trying to connect dots with making weapons and mind control and all that stuff. And then on top of all that, you know, you've got the John Lennon connection to the UFO stuff, because Mark David Chapman thought he was sort of being used to facilitate this battle of extraterrestrials of good and evil. It just opens up this massive can of worms with the Catcher in the Rye thing. So I'm glad you guys dove deep into that, because I never even talked about that before. I never even caught that in the book.
It's interesting because Kubrick has Danny and Wendy dressed up in red, white, and blue costume while she's reading Catcher in the Rye, which, again, you know, what is he saying here, right? He knew. At the Catcher in the Rye in 1980, or 79, when he made the film, was part of the MK Ultra program. If he knew that, how much more did he know, right? And even further, J.D. Salinger was in Germany debriefing the Nazis who were coming over on Operation Paperclip. That was his job. He could speak like 6 different languages, and he was debriefing them. He was part of Operation Paperclip, which is part of NASA, which is part of, once you open up the door, it just becomes unbelievable. And Dark Journalist, by the way, he just did a show like last week, an hour and a half show, which is a must watch about all of this. He's connecting the Del Shau Aerospace Club from California in the 1870s to NASA. There's actually to aerospace, to assassinations, to MK Ultra, and it's all part of the same thing. And it all occurred with Operation Paperclip, and J.D. Salinger was part of that.
Wow. Okay, that is interesting, because when I wrote my looking back on it, it's very amateur, because I was early in my journey of trying to understand everything. When I wrote Kubrick's Code, which was my attempt to talk about symbolism found in 2001, Shining, Clockwork Orange, and Eyes Wide Shut, I remember connecting some dots, but I wasn't able to take it all the way out. And now that I'm watching your guys' documentary, I'm like, okay, this all makes a lot more sense. Like, one example was I pointed out the strange amount of ladders that you see in the Overlook Hotel. I mean, they're freaking everywhere, and some of them are there for, like, there's no purpose for a ladder to be where they're at. And I thought, gosh, all I can think of is like the Freemasonic symbolism of the ladder and, you know, ascending through the ranks and all that stuff. But when you start digging into a lot of the stuff, you guys found some pretty interesting, I don't want to spill too many beans, but you guys found some interesting symbolism in The Shining on the walls and things like this.
Yeah, the lights on the walls look like 11s. There's several 11 symbolism. You got the twins that are 11s. There's double doors. The double doors up into room 237 are double doors. All of the hallway doors are double doors, which is symbolic of 11 and you know, and the twins.
And it's his 11th film, The Shining is.
Oh, interesting.
And 11 is a super cult number. It's about the splitting, and Crowley wrote a lot about 11, and don't forget, it was Flight 11 that hit the Trade Center, right?
Yeah. That was, I think even the if you know how there's that the Shining poster that's yellow and it seems to have like a, I don't even know how to describe it, like a child's face, and but it's actually like two elevator doors, you know? So there's a kind of like another 11 that I never understood, the Shining poster, the yellow poster, because it doesn't look like Danny. It doesn't really look like anything. It's just a strange poster.
It is the big T, the big giant T. Yeah. That looks like a, it's just the weirdest poster. I heard Kubrick designed it, so I'm not sure what he had in mind for that, but he has Masonic symbolism all over the place.
And do you guys think that, that the, because I know there's a part of the film, the documentary, where you guys talk about the these people in Denver, right? Because Stuart Allman keeps talking about Jack's employers, and then in the film there's a part where Stuart Allman's saying, yeah, all the finest people stay here. And it seems like it's a really sort of coded reference to maybe two classes of people or a sort of secret society in there. Do you think that this is referring to the Freemasons, or do you think it's referring to an Illuminati or something entirely different? What's your guys' take on that?
Well, the most powerful people in the world have a secret society that's located in Denver. The CIA is relocating as we speak to Denver from Langley, Virginia. See, Denver has always been the second biggest CIA outpost in America. Now it's turning into the first. And I'm pretty sure that's what Kubrick's talking about.
Wow. So, okay. You know,
there is an occult group that I have touched on, but only briefly because they're so dangerous, that is some of the most powerful people in the world. And they meet every year in Denver in the summer.
Is this something akin to like a Bohemian Grove type festival?
Yeah, only higher. Much higher.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because I'm pretty sure Arthur C. Clarke was part of it.
Is there a name of this group, or you just don't want to say it because you don't want that kind of heat?
They don't want anyone to know they exist, but I know they exist because I know one of their members.
Wow. Do you think this is related to all the conspiracies about the airport?
Oh, yeah. Completely related. It's related to Joan Benet Ramsey.
Oh wow! I just watched those documentaries too on Netflix about JonBenet Ramsey.
Oh, that's a cover up. That's a BS story.
That's wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Man. Okay. Now you got me something to try to figure out.
Oh, this thing, Ryder and I could make five more movies just unwrapping the connections between aerospace, occult, Stanley. Once you start unraveling it actually becomes unbelievable.
Please do. I'll line up to see five more of these.
And we even point out in the film that Stanley lived in Pasadena in 1940, exactly when L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons are doing their weird research. Where? In Pasadena.
Right. And you know, there's also kind of unrelated, but in The Shining, there, one of the things I saw in there that I have yet to sort of find a good theory as to why it's there. When Wendy is in the kitchen on the refrigerator, you'll see there's a photo of a rocket taking off, and it just seems out of place. I mean, there's no reason why you would put a photo of a rocket taking off on your kitchen fridge. It's not like it's children's artwork. And, you know, that could be fitting to a Jack Parsons reference. I don't know.
Well, also in the boiler room too, whenever Wendy is down there, there's a poster on the back of the wall that says choking. And then right after that is when she goes up upstairs and Jack is, you know, having his dream or whatever, and wakes up out of his dream and tells her that he had the dream that he killed her and Danny. And then Danny comes down, and then Danny, you know, Wendy is like, did you hurt Jack or whatever? So it's like, it's foreshadowing. It's, Kubrick does so much foreshadowing during the entire movie. I mean, there's a baseball bat. Do you remember whenever Jack, one of the more interesting scenes of The Shining is when Jack goes and looks at the model of the maze, and then that shot fades into the outside. It's one of the wildest shots of the entire movie. Well, right whenever he's going by the couch, there's a baseball bat on the couch. And there, he does that throughout the movie. There's several of those, like the teddy bear as well. The teddy bear in the beginning of the movie, whenever the doctor comes to visit Danny and Wendy at their apartment in Boulder, Danny's laying on a teddy bear. And then you have teddy bear symbol. There's a picture of teddy bears in their apartment room. There's then later on, whenever Wendy goes through her trauma of Jack trying to kill her, and she's been essentially mind fractured by the trauma. Then she sees the guy in the bear costume upstairs with the other guy that he's performing is, you know, sexual acts presumably on them. So Kubrick is a genius in that way of like foreshadowing events to later on to happen, not only through the dialogue of the characters, as we have pointed out, but through like symbolism as well, by just hiding things throughout the movie that you'll never even notice unless you've watched it a freaking 100 times.
You're right, because I haven't caught any of that. The what's interesting is the teddy bears, which comes up later in Eyes Wide Shut, which has that big, I'm sure you guys are familiar, the big ending scene where the child seems to be taken away from members of this sort of secret group. Their child gets you know, possibly trafficked, and there's all these teddy bears around.
The two actors that are at the end of the hallway where the little Tom Cruise's daughter is walking down through the teddy bears, they're at the Sidney Pollack party, those two guys. They're at the party. Now they're here waiting for her, and hardly anybody ever sees this, but there's teddy bears all over Lolita too, by the way. In Lolita's bedroom, there's a teddy bear. and of course we know the teddy bear is a universal symbol for what? Pedophilia. So,
seems like a lot of roads lead to that.
But there's an interesting thing. I don't know if you can see it on YouTube, but I've seen it only one time. And the filmmaker took The Shining and he split the screen and he ran one screen backwards from the end to the beginning and the other screen from the beginning to the end, right? And then you watch them at the same time. And that really shows what writer's talking about, because they literally mirror each other. Literally, the movie mirrors itself going backwards and forward, and you got to wonder what kind of genius could do that. I mean,
that's a film of perfection. And I took martial arts from a really young age, since I was 4 years old, and learned a lot of discipline from there. But my masters and my teachers always told me that you haven't perfected anything unless you can do your forms and your katas backwards as well as forwards. So that's an incredible. I've seen that too, Jay. Like I think they actually just overlay it. They overlay the movie going forward, and then they overlay it going backwards, and then everything just perfectly lines up. But there's another thing that equates to a lot of symbolism as well, which is one of the things that I seen that nobody else had ever seen in The Shining, which is when Jack sets up from, he gets up from the bar, and the second time they're in the gold room after he takes the drink from Lloyd the bartender, and he gets up and there's this lady that walks right in behind him that has like a handprint, what looks like a handprint on her ass, and she's actually the one that bumps into Grady. She's the one that actually bumps into Grady in order for Grady to spill the alcohol on Jack. And this, you can see this same type of handprint two decades later in Castaway with Tom Hanks, with the bloody handprint on Wilson, the volleyball. It's the same type of four-fingered handprint that's on Wilson, that's on the back of this lady's dress. And you can get into all the stuff about...
I know where you're going with that.
Yeah.
And I would contend that the other the other big film director that has intelligence ties is Robert Zemeckis, the guy that made Castaway. I could get into that sometime, but I'm not going to now, but it's just weird because he's got enough stuff in his movies to make you think, what does this guy know? And Kubrick has more than enough to make you wonder what he knows.
Zemeckis is the guy who did Back to the Future, right?
Yep.
Okay. And there's a lot going on there.
Oh, yeah. Those are really movies.
There's always like this weird sexual element that they hide in plain sight. Like even in Back to the Future, it's on the marquee of this little innocent small town that's like, I don't remember the title of the movie, but it's some clearly pornographic movie that they're playing, which it that used to happen back in the day. I'm old enough to remember that, but it's interesting because in Lolita, there is the scene where Quilty and Humbert are sort of like, Humbert's getting ready to shoot him. He's Quilty, who plays the sort of procurer of sexual favors. He says something to the effect of how he could have Humbert attend and watch executions. He says something about how he could have a person be used as a piece of furniture, which it seems so out of place coming from way back then when that movie was made. But I remember watching it during the heydays of 2020 and all the wild theories about Wayfair and human trafficking being done on the website. And it the whole thing always seems to sort of float around these same themes over and over of sex of various forms and occult sort of concepts. Like it just seems like they're always in there. Even with the reverse that you're talking about, the Shining being played forward and reverse, that's a major theme in Twin Peaks. I don't know if you guys are into Twin Peaks or not, yeah. But okay. Yeah. Like the reverse speaking they do in the lodges. There's a lot
of Twin Peaks, like the number 11. It's a duality. Right. And, David Lynch is a brilliant filmmaker, and Twin Peaks is just so over the top. Great. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I first watched it just maybe 2 years ago, and I watched it. I said, I don't know how it took me this long to watch this show. This is insane. And I've been just obsessing over it. I'm writing the book about it right now, but it's this massive endeavor I've been working on. And I don't know. It fits right in there because from what I understand, when Kubrick started filming The Shining, he the first day screened Eraserhead for everybody who was on the cast. That's the point. It's like we're talking about similar things, this sort of Kubrick, David Lynch world of baking symbolism into entertainment.
Kubrick walked out of Eraserhead, and I can't remember who it was. He walked out and he said, "Well, what did you think?" And he goes, "That was effing genius."
I love it. So that we're going to start wrapping up, but I do want to get your guys' take on Kubrick. Is the jury out, or do we know definitively, was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? Was he a mix of the two? What do you guys think?
Just like any human, he's a mix of the two. He made mistakes and he definitely, we were actually very nice to him. I'll be honest with you, because of our respect for him as a filmmaker, but we found out a lot of dirt and we didn't put it in. And I think that was the right move. And, I'll just leave you with this. When he died, his chauffeur wrote a book about Stanley. It's a really good book, actually. And when Stanley died, the chauffeur came home from the funeral. He and Stanley were the only ones that had key to Stanley's big office. And he opened up the door and there was like seven guys ransacking Stanley's office, and he doesn't know how they got in there, and they took away a lot of stuff, big cases of Stanley's archives and everything. So you have to assume that it was an intelligence agency of some kind, and they were doing exactly to Stanley what they also did to Tesla when he died. You know, they came in and took all his stuff.
Wow, interesting. Okay, I can respect that. I think that's a fair take. What do you think, Ryder?
Well, you can relate that to some other people like, Jeffrey Epstein, P. Diddy, like a lot of these types of people, the almost the same thing has sort of happened to them, but it's theory and speculation. That's a big reason why we didn't put a lot of the stuff in our film about him and his darker side, because there's it's a lot of speculation. So
let me tell you this, because this is we're talking about high weirdness and stuff. Stanley Kubrick died exactly 666 days before January 1st, 2001. Now, that's pretty weird by anybody's account. It makes me think that it might have been a fake death, because it's just such a coincidence. But here's what's really weird. Stanley was a chess champion. 666 days before he died, Kasparov lost to the computer. The first time that the computer ever beat a human being was exactly 666 days before he died. So it's... There's some coincidences here that you have to start wondering, is it fake? Is it planned? Or is it the simulation that we're living in? And I can't.
Right. That's, I know. I struggle with that too. And I think, you know, Kubrick was, I don't know if he was working with the film, Spielberg's film AI yet at this point or not, but the AI thing plays a role in all of this with, you know, intelligences, extraterrestrial, and, you know, you got 2001, which obviously is a variation on that. I did read somewhere about Kubrick was trying to film a big budget porn film at one time. I believe I read that in the Making of Eyes Wide Shut book.
Yeah, so that was his dream, was to shoot a 70 millimeter big budget porn movie. That would be the ultimate porn movie. And I have a feeling that one of the things that we didn't bring up in the movie, thankfully, was that Kubrick had two luxury apartments in New York City in the 50s when he had not had a hit film. And people have to ask themselves, well, how was he financing all of this? He didn't have a hit film till Spartacus. So that was 1960. So, you know, there are answers to those questions, but I don't think we wanted to answer them in the movie. One of my main things was I wanted Vivian Kubrick to not hate me anymore. So I hope that she loves this movie. And if you do, Vivian, give me a email and we'll talk.
Right on. Well, I want to thank you guys for your time. Thanks for joining me. If we can go around real quick, let's start with Ryder. Where can the audience grab the film? Where can they find you on social media, find your podcast, all that stuff?
You can purchase the film on Amazon Prime. Just type in A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3, or just A Clockwork Shining will work as well. And if you can't get it in your country, you can also find it on Apple TV Plus as well. And you can find my work on Raised by Giants on YouTube and any and all podcast platforms. Thanks so much for having us on, brother.
Absolutely. What about you, Jay?
Also, we'll be up on Vimeo for international audiences probably within a couple weeks. so apologize to everybody for not getting it up faster. I have a show on YouTube called Reality Check. You can check it out. I'm jaywidener.com, has all my free stuff, and you can watch all my movies at Gaia or on Amazon.
Awesome. And like I said before, I highly recommend all of these things. You guys have tapped into one of my early inspirations for all this. So I was very excited for the show, and I'm so thrilled you guys put Kubrick's Odyssey 3 together. I was waiting for, it must've been 12 years for this. So thank you very much for putting that together. And I look forward to, hopefully you guys can knock out 5 more. I don't know. Hopefully.
material.
All right. Well, thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
See you later.
Well, there we go. If you want to know the whole, we barely scratched the surface on their documentary. You got to go watch A Clockwork Shining, Kubrick's Odyssey 3. Get it on Amazon or Apple TV Plus. Jay said it's coming soon to Vimeo. It's very good. I streamed it as quick as I found it. I was like, done buying this. I'm watching it. And it was great. You can also check out Ryder Lee's podcast, Raised by Giants. He's got it on all the podcast platforms, and he's got a YouTube channel. He's got tons of great interviews on there. He's got interviews with some of the people that ran Stargate. And we're going to have him back on. I'm going to have Ryder come back on to talk to us about Stargate, because he's got just a hell of a lot of research. And then Jay Widener's a legend as well. He's got a YouTube channel, Reality Check, and you can check out his stuff at his website, jaywidener.com. I'll have links in the show notes where you can follow these guys and catch up on all the stuff. But go check out the video, see what you think. Till next time, stay positive.